The Packers did get Demaryius Randle back in their secondary on Monday in Philly, and Mike McCarthy said he liked what he saw.
Obviously, he plays a very challenging position, and coming back from his injury, you know, it definitely was taxing for him. So I thought he played a really good, solid game, but definitely having his presence and having him back out there made a big difference for us.
I'm Bill Scott. I'll have more from Titletown later on the Wisconsin Radio Network.
Thank you, BS. 16 minutes until 10 o'clock on your hump day morning. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life, all wrapped up into one nice, neat, lovable package. Glenn Klein in the studio, and he is on the East Coast of the United States of America. Please welcome back to Community Conversation a treasured member of the Power Rotation. We know him. We love him. We would not want to live without him. Author, Rich Cohn. Good morning, Rich.
Hey, I love being part of this. I think we're like a round table. I think at some point we should all get together and go search for some sort of grail.
What kind of grail would we search for?
I don't know, maybe Al Wasserman's original Chartist for Camp Menominee.
It would. Rich went to camp with me.
The first Crystal Stein that the first farewell dinner beer was drinking from or something like that.
I went to camp with Rich. He didn't go to camp with me. I want to be very clear about that. Yes, Camp Menominee, Eagle River, Wisconsin, and which really, I mean, it dovetails into the conversation that I want to have with you this morning. But first, we have this really good wing joint down the road from here, and we give away a 30-pack meal most days. And we were doing, like, you know, the 11th call or whatever. And then I realized it was like the radio equivalent of a participation trophy. And I do not believe in that. So we make the callers, the beautiful humans, earn their 30-pack meal deal from the Wingstop at 5400 Washington Ave in Racine.
That's good.
You know, it includes sauce, sides, veggies, and dip, Rich.
Yeah, that's good.
So here's what's going to happen. In the next hour, something that you say is going to be the question for the 30-pack meal. It will not be a Camp Menominee reference, though. It's got to be something that people could remember or at least write down. So that'll be that's what you call a good radio tease right there.
Yeah. You know, my high school, which was New Trier High School, had a radio station, WNTH.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was on that show because he was running for student council vice president, and they had a call-in, and you had to say what Herman Munster's address was.
Ooh.
To win a record. And I knew that address. It was like something Mockingbird Lane.
Mockingbird Lane. That's right.
Yeah. And I called in. I had no trouble getting through. And I answered the question. My brother said, I think this is my brother. And I was supposed to win like a Led Zeppelin record. And my brother was going to get it for me from the guy. And then he didn't have it. A week later, I'm like, where's my record? He didn't have it. And after 2 weeks, my brother said that he said, if you ask about that record again, he's going to come over here and beat the crap out of you.
You know,
so that's my experience of calling radio shows, just so you know why I'm a little bit hesitant.
Well, I've been calling
in. I never got my Led Zeppelin record, and a kid who was 10 years older than me threatened to beat me up for asking for it.
You're still bitter about it, aren't you?
Still waiting for that record.
So, speaking of the Munsters and Camp Menominee, Grandpa Munster was played by an actor named Al Lewis.
Yeah.
And Al Lewis was also, a different Al Lewis, was a longtime counselor, baseball instructor, eventually assistant director, and my mentor at Camp Menominee. And so I always, every single time I see the Munsters and see Al Lewis, I think of my mentor. And now I go on to buy the camp and the brand new hardball diamond that we built a Field of Dreams at Camp Menominee in the 90s, and it's called Al Lewis Field.
That's great. What are the fence? What are the power alleys in that thing? How big is that field?
It is 310, I think, to straightaway center. I want to say 250 to the left, 235 to right.
That's basically a little bit longer than the old Polo Grounds.
Exactly.
Which I think was 210 right down the line or something like that.
That's exactly right. And the old horse barn is in the right is beyond the right field fence, and there is an archery target on top of the barn that you aim for in Home Run Derby. It's beautiful.
That's cool. And do you get like a case of beer if you hit it or a new suit or something?
Yeah, we give the 13-year-olds a case of beer if they hit it. That's exactly what we do. All right, so Camp Menominee, very formative for a lot of men around the country and the world at this point. I mean, camp's been there since 1928. A guy that was a camper of ours in the 90, or the 80s was a guy named Stephen Glass. You know, mm-hmm. you know that name, Rich?
Yeah, man. He went to Camp Menominee?
Yep. Old Camp Menominee megaphone newspaper
reporter.
This is
weird because you know the people that came before you, but you tend not to know the people that came after you.
Exactly. And Stephen Glass, yeah. good camper, was a megaphone kid. That's the camp newspaper. And uh-huh. then some of you have seen the movie Shattered Glass. And how would you explain to the folks, Rich, what Stephen Glass did and what that movie Shattered Glass is all about?
Basically, he just, you know, made up a bunch of stories and wrote them as if they were journalism. So he went to cover an event and came back and invented characters and invented, you know, a story that didn't exist. That's how I would say it. It's just kind of fraud, I guess. So if you went out, you know, to cover a Cubs game and said that while you were there, somebody came out and robbed everybody in the stands and it was a huge story because that had never happened before, and then it turned out that none of that was true. That's basically what he did.
And he was published in a lot of very prominent periodicals and magazines. He pulled the wool over the eyes of a lot of top-notch editors to the point, I mean, it was one of the big scandals in journalism in the early 2000s.
And yeah.
And so I'm watching an interview with Stephen Glass on 60 Minutes after this all happened. Mm-hmm. And he had some issues at camp. And I don't remember which 60 Minute reporter was interviewing him, but he said, you know, I'd been through a lot of therapy. And he said, I finally figured out where this all started. And I remember exactly where I was sitting watching this. And I sat up and I was like, oh, my God, he's going to say it. But he didn't. It wasn't at camp, or at least he didn't say it was at camp. But
what did he say?
He never said.
And did he? What happened to him at camp?
Let's just say that.
Do you know?
I fired the counselor because of it.
Okay.
So that was
when you owned the camp.
That's when I owned the camp.
Yeah.
The counselor. It wasn't sexual in nature, but it was abusive. It was a rainy day. And he and another camper decided to start duct taping each other's wrists and ankles to see how much tape they could get on and still be able to break out. And then a counselor started participating in that and didn't stop it and actually participated in that. And that was very
okay.
And then he took Stephen and rolled him down the hill behind cabins 11 and 12 in the rain. That wasn't good.
Okay.
So he was fired. And,
well, you know, bad things happen to all of us, but a lot of us don't then go do this crazy.
Well, I'm not saying that that's why it happened, but it was fascinating.
It's fascinating. Now, it's interesting. You know, it's weird too because it happened before so much other stuff happened. You know,
that's my point.
Like, so many other bad things happened after that
was so scandalous when it came out that he had been doing that. There was another guy, I can't think of his Blair. What was the Jason Blair?
The guy at the New York Times.
Yeah, he was doing the same thing. Yeah,
basically.
And it was so scandalous now. But now we have people that make their livings producing fake news. Do you know Matt Taibbi?
I do know him. I mean, we're both sort of in Flip Rolling Stone, but I don't really know him.
Okay,
I know him.
He is not by any means a conservative journalist by any stretch of the imagination, but he wrote an article a couple of days ago that was in it was in Rolling Stone, and the article is entitled "The Washington Post Blacklist Story is Shameful and Disgusting," and he calls out a Washington Post technology reporter named Craig Timberg, who basically wrote a story claiming that these 200 sites of fake news were inspired by the Russians with absolutely zero proof at all that this existed. And it got through the Washington Post editors. Rich, what has happened to journalism in America in this part of the 21st century?
Well, they're under tremendous pressure because what happened is basically newspapers were paid for by classified ads, you know? That's what was really paying for newspapers. And then the internet came along and Craigslist came along, and they lost all their revenue. So suddenly they became kind of bankrupt, no money, and under a tremendous amount of pressure to generate things on the internet. And it's not that unsimilar to the Stephen Glass thing, because you said all these editors had the wool pulled over their eyes. Not really. I mean, kind of semi-willingly. If they'd really looked into it, they would have found out very quick these stories weren't true. They didn't sound true. You know, I mean, it's like a lot of the fake stuff on the internet. I see it. I look at it. I'm like, this is not true. This is garbage. You can tell if you read with any kind of skepticism that most of, you know, it's like the Mark Twain thing, like a lie's halfway around the world before the truth even gets one leg in his pants or whatever, mm-hmm. You know? So I just think that, you know, my father had this thing where he said, you know, believing is seeing. So it's just, if you write stories that tell you what people already want to know or want to believe, they tend to pick it up and go with it. Even they, probably if you ask them, know that it's not true. So it's just, all of this stuff is a product of the internet and social media that's just disrupted everything in ways people don't quite understand. And brand names and trademarks and all that stuff has no meaning anymore because it's so easily faked. You know, so you get to all the way to the point where it's, you know, Trump doesn't even need the media at all. He just goes straight to YouTube.
Well, I want to talk about Trump in a second, but let's reset. He's Rich Cohn. He is the author of the book on the Rolling Stones, plus a bunch of other great books. I've been doing some serious Rich Cohn reading lately, but the Stones book is called The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones. And what did you say about Christmas Giving? Nothing speaks Christmas more than a book about the Rolling Stones or something like that?
Yeah,
that was a good one.
Yeah.
And
anything to hawk my wares.
Exactly, and it well worth it. A book on the Chicago Bears called Monsters, a book on the Jewish Mafia called Tough Jews. This is Glenn Klein on WRJN. All right, but I think it's more than the internet, because a line was crossed in this recently completed campaign when outlets like the Washington Post and the New York Times decided that they weren't just going to cover Trump, but they were going to singularly try to defeat him. And it backfired. It blew up in their face.
Right.
And now they literally have got to go back and revisit just journalistic ethics. And we need a honest journalistic effort to keep, because see, if they do what they did, then a significant segment of the country is not going to believe them at all.
Well, that's already happened, you know. They just don't seem like an honest broker. And when you say, and another thing is now you can get a lot of the source material. So when you hear somebody characterize something, you just read sometimes the newspaper and you're like, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true. I mean, you've seen this speech. You've seen the exchange, and then you hear it characterized, and you know it's being characterized in a way that isn't true because it's an attempt to create a certain outcome. And the problem with that is it didn't work because Trump's president, okay? So it didn't, or it's going to be president. It didn't work, and it causes you to distrust the source, which is whatever newspaper you're reading. So it's ultimately, you know, meant to be damaging to Trump, it turned out to be damaging for the newspapers. It's almost like the weapons of mass destruction thing. You know, it's like really bad, bad things. So I'm not a genius at this, and I haven't wrapped my head around it about what exactly has happened. But I know that sometimes I expect to turn on like MSNBC in the morning and just see people running around screaming. You know, it's like just a crazy moment where the press, of which I'm a member, it's like can't hear its own voice. You know what I mean? Like they can't hear themselves.
I think it's true. I think it's true for parties on both sides of the political aisle and within the journalistic community. But the Democrats and the progressives have lost their mind, and we need them to gather themselves, because an unchecked dominant party like the Republicans have become in this country is dangerous. But if they keep just filtering lies, you know, remember the image of our congressman from this district is a guy named Speaker Paul Ryan. You might have heard of him. When he was running with Romney in 2012 as the vice president, the Democrats put out an image of him pushing a grandma over the cliff in a wheelchair. I mean, that's not going to get it done. And no. And this talk about what Trump may or may not do is just, it's unfounded. And the thought that he is an illegitimate president, as they made the case for Bush because he didn't win the popular vote, misses the point. We don't have a popular vote president. We have an electoral college. That's the rules of the game. And
it's sort of like when they have a thing and they say, you know, they want, the Green Party wants a recount because they think that's based on nothing.
On nothing.
Based on the fact that we can't believe that so many people actually voted for Trump, so it must be fake, right? It's like saying based on nothing, we want a recount. And that's good, and we should do that, and we should know the truth. And then Trump says, I don't believe the votes myself, and then that he's beyond the pale and he's a monster. And they do those two stories back to back, and it makes people just throw up their hands, and it's not working. I mean, and it's like, that's what I mean, like you can't hear yourself, because it sounds like there might be a difference between what the Green Party wants and what Trump says. I'm sure there is. But it's a nuanced difference that most people don't hear. It's like as if it's okay for the Green Party to want this because they are right, and it's a monstrous for Trump to say it because he is monstrous.
It's exactly right. And it's hypocrisy, right. And people are sick of the political hypocrisy where the Democrats and the left-leaning...
But they don't even hear it, man. They don't even... They're not even aware. They just... It's like so obvious to them that Trump is evil and wrong. I mean, the whole idea of we're not going to normalize Trump, okay? And if you vote for Trump, you're a racist. You're talking about 30, 40 million Americans. If you're going to say that, then you, and people who voted for Obama, they're the same
exactly.
People.
Exactly. The same districts that went from Obama here in Wisconsin in 2008 and 2012 went for Trump this time. Were those people not racist then? Were they open-minded and inclusive human beings at the time? And now they're homophobes and misogynists and sexist and racist? I mean, that's insane.
Right. But I don't like to even say it because I don't want to be attacked and I don't want to be yelled at. I just want to live my life and hope the Cubs go back and win another World Series.
Exactly.
That's basically what I'm focused on. But the fact is that it just doesn't make any common sense that, you know, to me, there was a moment where the New York Times ran an editorial where they said that if you vote for Trump, you are a racist.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. I mean, there's nothing to do. You're talking about millions and millions and millions of Americans. If you say that, we don't have we can't really come together and have a country in any way anymore. And it didn't work either.
It worked. It worked in reverse. It worked.
Yeah,
against,
worked in reverse.
Romney comes.
That's a weird thing. I was talking about this yesterday. Look, this was a strategy, which is let's make Trump so evil and so awful and so beyond the pale, even though. Whatever he is, the guy's been a public figure for 40 years. Everyone knows who he is. He didn't just suddenly appear. You can't say a guy is Hitler and then say, oh, and by the way, I went to his wedding. Okay? You went to Hitler's wedding. I wouldn't go to Hitler's wedding.
It would have been
I would like send a card and say, I'm sorry, I can't come to your wedding, Hitler.
It would have been a vegetarian wedding, anyway.
Yeah, and then you can't say that, and then now the guy is president. You know, and Obama's doing his best to sort of walk back from that and say, listen, the world, the problem that most people have is not that the world is coming to an end, but that the world is not coming to an
end.
Yes. And you got to figure out how to live in it and have a decent life.
Yeah.
And so now you've sort of said that this guy's Hitler, and now he's president, so what are you going to do? And the strategy of just doubling down on more of the same, it didn't work, so why is it going to work now? You got to find it. I agree with you. You got to find a different way. You know, to cover it, and
here would be a good start. Here would be a good start. How about reporting the facts? The facts are the Democrats and the progressives freaked out when Trump suggested that he might not roll over and just accept the election results. Then when he won, the leftists went to the streets, not just to protest, which of course is within their right, but started rioting. And then not only does Jill Stein of the Green Party call and pay for a recount that's going to start here in Wisconsin tomorrow, but then the Hillary Clinton campaign joins it, and the media says almost nothing about it. The hypocrisy of that and the irony of that. If Trump supporters would have taken the street to riot, if Trump would have paid millions of dollars for a recount in the state, they would be all over this guy.
Right, and by the way, most Democrats feel the same way. But they can't, they're afraid to say anything about it because they don't want to be called a whole bunch of names. But the fact is that I don't think it's a case where reporters who are doing what you're doing with two sets of rules are sort of saying, are aware that what they're saying is two sets of rules. They look at it like Trump is evil, so it's different. And, you know, basically the Jill Stein people are correct and within their rights. It's like they see two, it's like two different things. So, and so it's very hard to get out of that mindset. And this, when Obama says, like he said, you got to give him a chance or whatever he said right after he was elected, that's what he's saying. He's saying you got to get out of that mindset where everything the guy does is evil. And it's judged completely differently. So an example is, 2 days ago they were saying he's picking all these people for his cabinet who are inexperienced, beyond the pale, unlike other people, don't know what they're doing, they're going to destroy the government, okay? And then he picks this guy, you know, for Treasury, who is a Goldman Sachs guy, and I turn on TV and it's like, look, it's another banker. It's the same old thing. There's nothing different. And they do that on you know, days one after the other. And it just makes your, it makes you just sort of shut the whole thing off because it just seems like you can't trust it. You know, and I don't think it's, I don't even, that's what I mean by they don't hear themselves, which is they don't hear that you said something completely different yesterday than you're saying today. And the fact is, the whole idea of we're not going to normalize Trump and accept him as president, he's going to be president for the next 4 years. And what you're talking about, which is basically saying we're not going to accept him as president, is, remember when Mitch McConnell said his main goal is going to be to get, make sure Obama's not a two-term president?
Yeah, he said it once.
Yeah, he said it once. So that was a bad thing to say, well, you know? Because basically, the idea is, I mean, look, we grew up in a different time. I just remember, like, I was not a big supporter when he ran of Bush, the second Bush, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, right?
Well, no,
Bush.
No, just the W. Number two just had the
right.
W.
But when he got elected and after the whole recount thing happened, and that was a different kind of recount because it really was genuinely close and right after the election, I said, now I have to really try. I have to hope this guy succeeds, especially after 9/11. My hope is he becomes the greatest president we ever had because all our fates and the futures of our families and our kids are all linked together, man.
Yes.
We're succeeding together or failing together, and we need to help each other succeed. And that whole idea just seems like it's gone, and it's sad.
Well, one of my major goals in my life is to, as much as in my own little ways, to bring it back together. But one thing you got to say about W, even though he missed a golden opportunity, I feel, given how he conducted the war, et cetera, he certainly threw out a hell of a first pitch at that World Series game. That was incredible.
Well, didn't he practice that for like days?
He practiced it, and then he was going to do it from the front of the mound, and then he saw Derek Jeter, and Jeter said, you can't do it from the front of the mound. You got to be on the top of the hill. And he said, don't bounce it. They'll boo you. And he threw a perfect strike. It was such a fantastic moment. Baseball, such an integral part of the healing for not only New York City, but the whole country after 9/11. And I feel my heart has been somewhat healed by the Cubs World Series. I think about it every day. It brings me joy on a daily basis. And I was thinking about other moments like the birth of our six children, great moments at camp, weddings, etc., that have brought me great joy, and why I feel that this is different. Here's the difference. Your kids get married, they might get divorced. They might get sick. They might disappoint you. the joy that you had is not going to be without tarnish. The Cubs winning the World Series in 2016 will never be tarnished. That's something that can never be taken away. That Game 7 will stand in history, and I'm pretty happy about it. I think you would agree.
Yeah. Well, there's a great movie I saw on Netflix called Fastball. Have you seen that?
No.
It's just a documentary about the fastball. And I grew up, this is like the kind of thing I had to tell my father, knowing it would make him happy, even though I didn't want to give him the satisfaction. And it was, he always said that the fastest pitcher ever was Bob Feller, pitched for the Indians. And they had these different guys, and Chapman was pitching 105. And Feller's fastest pitch was like in the 90s. And they went back and they looked at it, and when they radar gun Chapman and every pitcher now, the gun is right after the ball comes out of their hand.
Yes.
And that's when it's moving the fastest. And it's losing a mile per hour for every foot, I think, that it travels. And they sort of went back to Bob Feller, and they figured out, based on today's gun, what he was pitching. And I think it was 110 miles an hour.
Once again, Rich's Cone, Rich Cone's dad, Herb, proves to be right. Unbelievable. Well, we are way over time, but I'm going to be off the radio for 10 days. I'm going home for the Klein Family Confab in Tampa tonight. So it was well worth it, as it always is. Get Rich's book, The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones. I'm bringing it with me on the vacation, and we will talk to you next month, my friend.
All right. Have fun. Say hello to all those clients for me.
Thank you.
Your radio friend is on AM 1400 WRJN Racine. FM 98.1 Kenosha and FM 99.9 Racine.
Well, in baseball parlance, we are in extra innings, but it was very much worth it. Kind of like the extra innings of Game 7. But we'll still cover the news and the world at WRJN.
Deadly fires and weather. Trump's Treasury pick. On